From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today, a conversation with a filmmaker. Richard Dutcher is our guest. I don't think he likes the term much, but he's often referred to as the father or godfather or whatever of Mormon cinema. Dutcher was one of the first filmmakers to realize the potential of an audience of faithful, movie-going saints. But he wasn't ever much interested in prosaic, faith-building plots and one-dimensional characters. Most of his films have explored big existential questions, which get at the nature of God and the matter of losing one's faith. Dutcher himself lost a part of his faith, the faith in Mormonism part, but he's still working through the big questions. Today in the program, we'll talk about the ideas in his films and his spiritual and artistic journey. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. A lot of filmmakers say their movies are personal, but when you hear it from Richard Dutcher, he really means it. For years, Dutcher made what you could call Mormon movies, Mormon characters, a lot of Mormon themes. He was one of the first filmmakers to realize the potential of a Mormon movie-going audience, but he never really did settle for simple faith-promoting films. They explored really big questions, which got at the nature of God, the matter of losing faith. These days, Richard Dutcher is no longer a believer, at least a believer in Mormonism, though his latest release, he does seem to be working out some big spiritual and moral themes. Dutcher has described his film called Falling as deeply personal, dark and violent at times. We're using the film, which is now playing in Salt Lake City, as a jumping-off point for a conversation about his life and his work. We invite you to join the conversation if you like. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. I'd also like to hear from you on Facebook or on Twitter. Richard Dutcher is an independent filmmaker and producer, writer, director, all of those things, actor, editor. His films include God's Army, Brigham City, Evil Angel. His film Falling is showing at the Broadway Center Cinemas in Salt Lake City through May 17th, and we'll give you more details about that as we go along. Richard Dutcher, welcome.
Thanks for being with us. Great to be here.
So I wondered, when was the last time you saw, we should say, you made Falling several years ago. It's been a while now. And in some ways, it sort of is this parallel story of the trajectory, your own sort of personal story, which we'll talk about, obviously. But I'm wondering what it's like to see it now.
Well, now, we did the premiere of the film about 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
2.5 weeks ago. And I actually, it's a funny thing about being a filmmaker. You often don't, you make a film and you're very, very intimately involved with it. You see it 300 times until you're finished with it. And then you put it out there. And I think most of us, we put it out there and we move on to the next thing. And so for this one, I hadn't seen Falling in probably a couple of years when I saw it at the premiere. And usually during a screening, I will I get up, I pace, I usually sit in the back on the side so that I can when parts of the film that, I've watched way too many times come up, I'll go pace in the lobby, get a soda, whatever. And I was expecting to do that with this one, and I didn't. I was there and involved and taking the journey one more time. And it was interesting. Enough time has passed now. As you mentioned, I shot the film probably 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And this film had a very unique process. Usually you just, you have a script, you finance the film, you make it, you get it out there, and you move on to the next thing. And
yeah.
This was very, very different. I wrote it, and then, probably 6 or 7 years elapsed before I actually filmed it, and a lot had changed in my own life in that period.
Well, that's an understatement.
Yeah. And then I shot the film and spent a long time in editing because I was letting the film evolve. Again, it was a very different process because usually you just shoot the script you have, you finish it, you put it out there.
Yeah.
And with this, I was still, even in the editing, I was searching for, I was kind of digging in the material that I had shot for what the real core of the film was. And the only way I could get to that was through, through the process of writing, getting 90% there, through the process of directing the film, getting 95% there. and then just waiting for that final 5%. And so I took, you know, probably two and a half years in the editing and going back and reshooting some things and then finishing it. And then now waiting, you know, even a couple years past that and watching the film again, it's been quite a process. I think the first time I released the film for a very brief run in Salt Lake City for a week and in Los Angeles for a week. This was in 2008. And I had at that point, I had a really interesting experience with it. The very first time that I screened it for the public and I did a Q&A afterwards. And it was – it is, as I've referred to it, such an intensely personal film for me where I feel like I'm just kind of cracking my chest open and saying, here, look what's inside. And I think it was still so fresh at that time. It was so freshly finished that I remember getting up for the Q&A and not being in the mood. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't and I felt like it was complete. I felt like – it didn't matter if the film made money. It didn't matter if the film really got out there. The only thing that mattered was that I had done it. And so I actually had this feeling of just wanting to take the film and keep it. You know, it was mine. Put it in a vault. You know, just it was done. It was finished. And in a real sense, I did that. You know, I took the film and didn't release it on DVD, didn't release it in any more theaters, didn't push it at all. And it wasn't until recently, I think, that it was that I was ready to put it out there.
What was the difference? What made you figure, all right, I'm ready to show this again? Because here's the thing, and I want to work through this hour. Because you talked about I wanted to figure out what the core of this thing was that I wanted to say with this film. And there were a couple of things going on. And the question that kept coming up for me was, and my sense of it was, he wrote this as a somewhat maybe skeptical Mormon, but still a Mormon who'd been on this kind of journey. Does it change it now that you're not that person? Like when you see it now, do you think, I don't think that way necessarily. I don't necessarily, you know what I mean? We'll work through that. I want you to think about that question. What difference does it make as a filmmaker now who's not in the faith, mm-hmm. who created this, you know, the themes were sort of percolating as a man of faith. And then how does it change? Like, that's the thing that I kept wondering about. But let's sort of lay some groundwork first.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you, so introduce us, those of us who obviously haven't seen the film yet, to the characters. Let's start with Eric.
Right.
Tell us who Eric is.
Eric Boyle is a lapsed Mormon. So he was raised Mormon, served a mission, wanted to be a filmmaker, and so, you know, married, went out to Los Angeles to become a filmmaker, and over the years just kind of fell into becoming a stringer, which is one of these guys that drives around Los Angeles with a video camera, looking for accident sites, crime sites, trying to beat the police or beat the other news crews to
the scene of the crime.
Yeah. And so that's what he does. So he sees a lot of violence. He's in the worst parts of the city. He sees all the worst parts of the city. He records all the worst parts of the city. And he's just gotten to a point when the film takes place over about four days.
Yeah.
And he's gotten to this point where his soul is just tired of this, you know, and he realizes that somewhere along the way he's just lost himself.
Yeah. Tell us about Davey. We'll come back, of course, to Eric because I want to work through a few things there. But tell us about Davey because there's a scene I want to play. It's early on in the film. Davey has, as a lot of actors have, she goes to this acting class. There's this kind of charismatic teacher up there who raises this question in this scene about what makes you so special. Do we need to say anything more about this?
No, I don't think so, except I think it really illuminates her character, you know, who she is, what she wants at this point in her life.
Yeah. Here it is. Here's a scene from Richard Dutcher's Falling.
There are 500,000 actors in this town. 100,000 good ones. They all want to be Tom Cruise. What makes you that one out of 100,000 that's going to make it? I mean, just who the hell do you people think you are?
I'm Davy Boyle.
What was that? Did you say something?
I said I'm Davy Boyle.
And what makes Davy Boyle so special? Why is Davy Boyle going to make it when all the rest of these poor suckers are going to fail?
Because I want it.
All right. But they want it too.
But I really, really want it.
How much you want it?
I want it more than anything.
Say it like you mean. Get on your feet. Who the hell do you think you are? What do you want?
I'm Davy Boyle. And I'm gonna be a star.
Say it again. Say it like you mean it.
I'm Davy Boyle. And I'm gonna be a star.
Oh, come on.
I'm Davy Boyle. And I'm gonna be a star.
That was no better than the other one.
I'm Davy Boyle. And I'm gonna be the biggest f***ing star in the whole world.
So it's really intense here. And you sort of lay bare this kind of raw ambition in her. It's really interesting. And I'm wondering, where did that come from? Because it seems like this question of sacrifice. What do I have to, as and we won't mention, we won't give away too much in the film, but you know, this question really comes up later as well. What were you thinking about in this sort of this part of the film as you were writing it?
Well, first of all, that was an amazing performance by Virginia Reese. She's the actress that plays Davy in the film. And she really brought out that it's something that I just saw in L.A. You know, I went out there shortly after college, just like Eric Boyle does in the film, and became very involved in the independent film scene, the acting scene. And you just see this. I mean, people become so focused that everything else falls away, and it becomes all important and all consuming, this desire to succeed in the film industry. And I saw that so much that I just had to portray it.
But what's the ethical question there? I mean, because it seems like for you in your life, this idea of what do I have to sacrifice to do this thing I want, that seems like a theme throughout your life.
Yeah, that's very true. I've come up against that several times in my life and made different choices depending on where I was in my life. For instance, for me, you know, I'd always felt this – I'd wanted to be a filmmaker since I was a kid, you know, since I was 7 years old, since I saw my first film in a movie theater. And I'd grown up Mormon, and so I'd always had this conflict where I felt like, you know, I wanted to be a man of God, so to speak. I wanted to be a that's the way I would put it, rather than saying a good Mormon. I really wanted to be a man of God, but I also wanted to be a filmmaker. And I always felt that those two things clashed. And then when I
– Why?
Why? I think because the what is the predominant culture, entertainment culture, film culture, seems so very much opposed to that. Anybody who's worked in the industry or been in the industry at all, from day one, you feel this is not the industry you necessarily want to be in if you're trying to grow your soul in any way.
Right.
And so, you know, for me, when I was
– wait, do you still believe that, by the way?
Oh, absolutely.
Seriously? There's still an essential conflict between being a good man of God I'll just put it this way, I'm a good Mormon, and being a filmmaker.
Yes, you have to make a very conscious – it has to be a very conscious, almost daily – you have to remind yourself daily why you're doing this, because it's too easy to get pulled into the rest. Because for most people, 99% of those who are in the film industry, I mean, they're after the same things, you know, after the fame, the power, the wealth, the sex. You know, it's all about ego. It's all about – I mean, that are the predominant motives for most people who are in this industry. And then there's a very small segment and I have to reach back, you know, generations sometimes to filmmakers who have went against the current, you know, who have actively used film – as a way to explore or express human spirituality, and not only spirituality but just humanity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you look out there. I mean, every year we're a comic book culture. You know, we're a very adolescent culture artistically, especially in film, you know, not so much in some of the other art forms, but especially in film. You know, you see the things that, you know, that drive the box office, that keep cinema alive, basically, are the Avengers. You know, it's comic book movies. It's vampire movies. It's it's adolescent stuff. And so and if you're in Los Angeles and you're looking for a community of people who are interested in making art, making meaningful films, you're hard-pressed, you know, to find that because like I say, that motive is very rare.
Yeah. So I got you off track. You were contemplating a mission as a young, you know, Mormon boy, and you figured there was an essential conflict there. And so you made the call that, all right, I'm going to sacrifice, right?
Right. Yeah, and to me that was a huge sacrifice because what I wanted more than anything else personally was I didn't want to serve a mission. I wanted to just pack up my duffel bag, go to Los Angeles and become a filmmaker. But I felt like, you know, I felt a divine duty, I suppose, to do that. And so I very consciously – and it was a big sacrifice. You know, it felt – at the time, it felt like what I referred to later in another sense. It felt like an Abrahamic sacrifice. You know, it was like I'm giving up what I love the most and want the most in order to do what I feel like God wants me to do. And so I did. Yeah, I served a mission, you know, very, very dedicated. I succeeded in, you know, in putting all these ambitions and artistic goals, you know, aside for a while. And then came back and just went full bore into it, you know, and found myself once again. You know, I got my film degree and, you know, took my wife and just went to Los Angeles and just got into it. And again, found myself fighting this these two very, very incompatible, I felt like incompatible things. And we won't go into that whole story, but I came to the point where I think when I was writing this film, when I was writing Falling, I was an active, believing Latter-day Saint. And I'd found myself, I'd made my first independent film. I'd gone out, raised the money, and felt myself making these choices, you know, these compromises, these spiritual compromises that make a little dent, I felt like, you know, kept making a little dent in my spiritual integrity. You know, and you keep saying, well, the end is going to justify the means. You know, I'm just getting where I need to be so I can make the kind of films that I want to make. But at the end of this process, going through, you know, some really going through a lot of the experiences that Eric goes through here. In fact, some of the conversations from Falling are taken, you know, as verbatim as I could remember from actual conversations that I had at the time with producers, with my wife, et cetera. And but found myself once again at that place where I felt like after I'd finished Girl Crazy, my first film, and it went to HBO and Cinemax, but I felt like I had sold something, you know, like it was something was missing, something was wrong.
Yeah.
And at that point, I really felt like I had to make that choice. It's like I was either going to continue be a filmmaker or I was going to be a man of God. And I made that choice, you know, and I said, okay, I guess the filmmaking is behind me. I started looking into teaching and it was one of the most unhappy, you know, periods of my life. Fortunately, it only lasted about 6 months because I think once I had done that, made that next Abrahamic sacrifice, that was when, you know, I stayed informed on the film scene. And one day when I was laying out the papers, I think I've told you this story before, in fact, laying the stories, you know, every Friday I would take the LA Times and spread it out and look at the reviews. And one Friday I was out barbecuing hamburgers for my family and I had the Times spread out there and I was looking at, you know, there's a review for a new Indian film. There's a review for a new gay-themed film. And I remember thinking, why don't Mormons do this? Why don't, you know, there's 12 million Mormons out there. Why don't Mormons have their own cinema?
Yeah.
And it just clicked for me and I suddenly realized, oh, the reason they don't is because guys like me aren't doing that. And so at that instant I felt like I had a not necessarily a divine call, but definitely a mission. You know, it was like, okay, I'm going to create a Mormon cinema.
So at that point, you figured then you could do both.
Exactly. And I was thrilled. I was happy.
But wait. Yeah, you were thrilled. But what was the thing that – see, because this is interesting. You figure, all right, I can do both now. But did that mean in your mind, you think at the time that, okay, but what I have to do then is create films, though, that are – faith promoting?
No. What I in fact, I
because you
was
never
a,
have.
No, I was always kind of a lifelong hater of most church films. You know, I thought even though I was a believing member, I thought these are cheesy. They're just, you know, propaganda. They're bad propaganda, badly made. Everything from, you know, the missionary films to the temple films, I just always felt like, even when I was a kid, it was like, just give me a camera. I can do better than that.
Yeah.
You know, that's a little cocky, but that was me. And by that point in my life, you know, I had been, you know, I'd been studying. I knew Satyajit Ray, you know, I knew Bergman, I knew these other filmmakers, and those were the filmmakers that inspired me, that those were the filmmakers that I felt were
asking the big questions?
Yes. And because they were asking the big questions, you know, it elevated their storytelling. It elevated them as artists. It elevated their films. And those were the filmmakers that I most admired. Those were the ones that I felt were the great filmmakers who had somehow added to the world, to, you know, had helped humanity progress, you know, in some tiny way because of the work that they had done. And that's what I was interested in doing. So even when I had this, it was a balancing act, you know, because I realized, okay, I want to make a film that will create this Mormon cinema that'll actually kind of pull together this audience. So, you know, I knew I couldn't do anything too out there.
Yeah.
You know, so it would have to be something that would appeal to the mainstream Mormon. But at the same time, what I was interested in was not so much, you know, again, not a proselyting tool,
no.
You know, not anything like that. You know, it was just simply I wanted to tell the story of what being a contemporary Mormon, at least from my point of view and from my experience, was. I wanted to tell my story, basically.
So you do God's Army. And then it's interesting because States of Grace comes next.
Brigham City, actually.
Pardon me. Yes. States of Grace is sort of God's Army too.
Right.
Right. It's so interesting, though, because you don't ever really settle in there. God's Army was incredibly popular in the LDS community, but then you keep pushing it. Right?
Yeah.
The themes get darker and the questions get more difficult, it seems.
Right. Yeah, I was impatient because I wanted to jump right into, you know, I wanted to go right from God's Army to the Seventh Seal, you know. Well, actually, in all honesty, the script I wrote right after I had written God's Army, before I'd even shot God's Army, was Falling. That was the screenplay that I wrote next.
Yeah. And which is so interesting. Which we'll talk more about this, but keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, but and so, you know, I wrote that and it was pretty much exactly what it turned out to be. We'll talk about, you know, how my own changes in my evolution, you know, informed the directing of the film. But it was very much the same. And I was ready to do it. In fact, I was going to I was on a trip to Los Angeles to cast Falling when I had the idea for Brigham City and realized that I should do that next. And my wife at the time, Gwen, she informed me. She said she loved Falling, but she said, I really don't think you should do that next. You know, I don't think the audience is ready for that. You know, they might tar and feather you if you do that next. And so I had that in the back of my mind. And when I came up with the concept for Brigham City, I realized, okay, that's the next. That would be a good next step. You know, we need to work up to this.
There's no music much, really. I mean, it's incredibly. I mean, handheld. A lot of the movement. It's really spare, saturated color. It seems. It's really austere. In its style. What were you thinking about with that you wanted to go?
The entire approach of the film was, even in the writing of the film, is I wanted it to be honest. You know, I didn't want to, in either way. I think I've never admitted this before, but I think in some ways when I was making God's Army, I was probably the most unkind way to myself, to put it, was I think I was pandering a little bit. You know, I felt like, okay, you know, if you fudge it either way, if you make it a little darker than it needs to be, or if you make it a little lighter than it needs to be, it's both. I was trying not to.
You
do
were compromising.
That. Yeah, I felt a little bit like I had. Pandered just a little bit to the audience. It's still a film. I'm very proud of the film.
Sure.
Love the film, but I did feel like it wasn't as honest of a work as it could have been.
Because you figured the Mormon audience will only go so far with you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I felt like I was pulling back here and there, you know, and even though I pushed it in a few areas, I felt like I wasn't quite as honest as I – and as brave as I should have been as a filmmaker. Financially, I think I probably walked the line pretty well. But then that changed with Brigham City. I felt like I told the story that I wanted to tell. And by that time, I was hooked, you know. And with Falling, everything – I just wanted everything. Every – whether it was – I wanted it very real. You mentioned the music. I mean, one of the things I dislike about a lot of contemporary films is, you know, the music is so there. And once – if you look at it, if you have some objectivity, you realize how false and how phony that often is. The music's there to, you know, tell you how to feel. And, you know, you don't walk around in real life and have a score behind you, you know, and telling all the people around you how they're supposed to be experiencing this moment. And that's what I wanted from the film. I wanted the audience to be like a, you know, someone in the room who, you know, you see what's happening and, you know, you make your own judgments. You have your own impressions. You're bringing – and I found, oddly enough, I found that by not including a score in the film, audiences aren't used to that. You know, they're used to being led. They're used to being told how to feel. And by not putting that there, it in a strange way, actually the film kind of reaches out and pulls the audience in a way that they're not accustomed to, because then they become an active participant instead of just being a passive person, you know, being told, being spoon-fed this story. They're having to participate, you know. And I think it's one of the reasons that the film, I think, really holds people, is because they don't know where – they're not being told where it's going. They're just – they're a part of it. They feel like they're along for the actual experience. And I try to do that with the cinematography. I wanted everything to feel as real as possible. You know, I just wanted it to be – I didn't want to put a nice veneer over it and make it nice. And oddly, interestingly, some of the – and I've done some very polished work as far as visually, but I find some of the images in this, even though I purposefully wanted a grainier image, shot it on film because I wanted this grainy Super 16 film, because I wanted a grainy image, chose the color palette very carefully, even the color of the walls. You know, we'd paint the walls, all this stuff, because I wanted a certain, you know, certain feeling of I guess I would say sculpted reality is probably the way that I would put it.
Richard Dutcher is with us, independent filmmaker based here in Utah. His film Falling is currently showing at the Broadway Center Cinemas in Salt Lake City. It screens tonight at 9:55, starting tomorrow and through Thursday. That's May 17th. It's going to show at 9:05. You can go to our website for all of the details, KUER.org/Radio West. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us the filmmaker Richard Dutcher. We're talking about his film Falling, which is currently showing in Salt Lake City. You can go to our website for the particulars about all of that. You can join us if you like. If you have questions or comments, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. There's a scene I want to play from the film, and this is – you were sort of referring to that experience in Hollywood. And this is a moment – you're meeting with a producer. Eric is.
Right.
Your character is meeting with a producer. And you've got a screenplay. Set this up for us, if you would, because I think it's interesting. It sort of reflects this idea of what they want. You know, set this up for us, if you would.
Yeah, this is Eric – has continued, you know, he's fallen into being a stringer, but he's continued the whole time to write, to try to, you know, cultivate relationships, so that he hasn't released his ambition by any means. And so, you know, he's continuing to, you know, just schmooze and to make connections and to try to get his scripts in front of people. And so this is a producer that he's finally, you know, got a script in front of. He's got all his hopes, you know, that this guy's going to help him finance a movie. And so during his day, he's actually out, you know, driving around the streets in his international scout and has a meeting. So he just, you know, shuts off his phone, turns off his camera and drives into Beverly Hills and meets this guy at his poolside and has this conversation. And the producer is played by a great actor named Hamilton Mitchell.
I thought you said you liked it.
I do like it. I'm not going to make it. If I give you money, you got to give me something I've never seen before. Something nobody's ever seen before. Otherwise, who cares?
Mark, you've never seen this story before.
What are you, deaf? Last year somebody shows blood. This year you got to show bone. Next year you got to show inside the bones. Whatever it's called.
Marrow.
Right. I don't know what that is. I don't know what it looks like. You've got to show it to me. Then I'll be shocked. Then I'll be offended. Then I'll remember your name. Then I'll put out $10 to see whatever it is you're going to show me next.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Something new. That's all anyone wants to see.
Okay, I get the picture.
Do you? That's how they all started. The big directors. You gotta shock us first, otherwise we'll never learn your name. Later on, you can move into the mainstream if you want. That's the secret to success. You've got to push it further than anyone's pushed it before. It's easy. You're a good writer. You just got to know what buttons to push.
You still feel that way?
About
how the system is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It still works like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I can even be more cynical than that, but... I think there are language restrictions on what I can say.
Yeah, we had to beep a few things out. But is it cynical? Is that the word to describe the way you feel about that, about the process, part of world anyway?
I actually don't think it's cynical. I think it's realistic. I think, in fact, I kind of consider my approach an optimistic realism. But you have to acknowledge the way it is. You have to see. You know, see the world, or in this case, the industry. You know, the way that it actually is. Otherwise, you're kind of operating in your own, you know, kind of ineffectively in your own fantasy world. So, I still stick by this. I mean, it's pretty, you know, straightforward. I could probably make it sound a little nicer, but yeah, I think that's the way it is.
So you, for a while you didn't compromise. It doesn't sound like too far. You did find that magic moment with God's Army. I mean, you know, that was a really successful film. But I guess you couldn't help yourself, right? I mean, because it's interesting, that mass appeal.
Right.
You were doing pretty well.
Right.
So why not just stay with that formula?
Oh, well, there's no way to, I mean, to, well, what I found, I mean, what was so exciting to me was not only, I mean, the creation of a Mormon cinema was very exciting. You know, that was like, that gave me a purpose, gave me something to do and to accomplish. But what was most exciting to me was this suddenly being able to use my, you know, to use my spirituality or my spiritual evolution or growth to inform my filmmaking and to use the filmmaking, you know, to be able to tell these particular stories and delve into these particular issues and explore them was able to inform my spirituality. And so being able to suddenly having not only being able to do both things, but have them both informing and helping each other progress and evolve, that was exciting. And so for me, I realized that I was hoping that, you know, a large part of the audience would follow me, but I just knew that that's where I was going. You know, I knew that Falling was coming. I knew, you know, States of Grace. I knew, you know, before God's Army opened, I knew what that story was going to be. And so I knew where I was going, and that's what gave me the passion to keep going there, because I didn't know what was going to be beyond that. But yeah, that's what I always had in mind. So, and I, you know, and there was a frustration. I think the last time we spoke, you know, probably, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, I was very frustrated because Mormon cinema was becoming something that I didn't want it to be. You know, I wanted it to be something that explored, you know, the Mormon psychology, the Mormon history, the Mormon doctrines. And it wasn't becoming that at all. Later, I kind of understood, you know, with perspective, it's like it was inevitable what it was going to be. It was going to be exactly, you know, what it was.
And which that, what? Lots of goofy romantic comedies about.
Yeah, well, I thought it was, you know, a fairly – it was an accurate expression or a response to what the mainstream Mormon community wanted. And so that's – and they weren't really interested, you know – and I, you know, there obviously was a fairly large segment who were interested in the kind of stories that I wanted to tell and that I was hoping other filmmakers would want to tell.
The more complex side of it all.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, once I finally realized that I wasn't, you know, the whole Mormon cinema thing was for me, you know, an important part of what of my filmmaking, but really. What I came to realize is that I wasn't making Mormon cinema. I was making my cinema,
yeah.
You know. And once I came to peace with that and realized that, you know, Mormon cinema was going to be what it was going to be and I was not going to be a part of that, or at least I would be a, you know, an offshoot,
mm-hmm.
I was okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there Mormon cinema anymore, really?
Not really.
Yeah.
In fact, what it you know, there was this burst of, you know, stories and
– yeah.
And then, you know, they stopped doing well at the box office, whether it was the novelty factor wore off. Or I personally believe that the quality, you know, was at such a low level that moviegoers just weren't going to pay $8 to see that when they could see Lord of the Rings. Or
you've always said this, that it's about quality.
Yeah. 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 And so I think that was the largest factor in kind of killing that off. And what we see now is, you know, the Mormon – younger Mormon filmmakers have understood – what can be done, you know, because they kind of grew up in this. You know, they saw a films opening in theaters and going nationwide, and so they understood that you could actually make a film and get it played in theaters. And now what they're doing is exactly what I was responding to before I made God's Army, which is, you know, some of them are doing, you know, good work, but they're doing mainstream work. You know, they just want to be filmmakers, and they're kind of, you know, putting the Mormon experience in the closet or in the drawer and just telling stories that are entertaining stories and worthwhile, you know, and they're supporting their families and that's all good. But what I had always hoped for, you know, this you know, deep – you know, I always wanted Mormon cinema to be the – because no one else is interested in it. I wanted – interested in spiritual film. I wanted it to be the source for intelligent – introspective, thought-provoking spirituality in film. Didn't happen.
So what do you make of Napoleon Dynamite? That seems like an example of what you were just saying.
Oh, it's a wonderful film.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful film. And I don't – you know, I wouldn't even criticize that kind of film because they're – you know, they're
– Yeah, but it didn't deal with existential thoughts. I mean, it was just, you know, these guys went to church on Sunday and then during the week they made this film that became this kind of cult success.
Right.
Right? So you don't have a problem with that, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
But see, that's not dealing with the existential questions that you were just talking about.
Right. Well, I love all kinds of film.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm not criticizing, you know, I'm not going to criticize a film just because it's not the kind of films that I want to make.
Sure. But so Napoleon Dynamite isn't exactly what you had in mind when you were talking about Mormon cinema.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But again, it's a wonderful film. And
for the uninitiated, I guess I should mention that Napoleon Dynamite was made by filmmakers who were themselves Latter-day Saints.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Should just say that, I guess. Not
yeah. Jared's a wonderful filmmaker. I mean, he's you know, I don't know him well, but he's a wonderful person. And so, you know, God bless him. That's great what he's accomplished. But I what frustrated me was not that there were people making, you know, mainstream or different films. What frustrated me was that there were not some filmmakers who were exploring the Mormon experience.
Richard Dutcher is with us, an independent filmmaker based here in Utah. His film Falling is currently showing at the Broadway Center Cinemas in Salt Lake City. Go to our website for the particulars about the screening times. We need to take another break. We'll be back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now with Richard Dutcher. We're talking about his, well, a lot of things, particularly about his film Falling, which is now showing the Broadway Center Cinemas in Salt Lake City. Go to our website for the particulars about that. And by the way, there's a trailer for the film also on our website. I wanted to ask you about, there's a moment in the film, and I've heard you talk about this, and I wanted to have you mention this. There's a scene in the film where Eric is in bed with Davey, and she notices, detects, it's late at night, he's crying. And you've talked about the fact that this really kind of almost verbatim came from an experience that you had. Set this scene up for us, if you would, this moment.
Yeah, this is a moment when he, after he realizes how far he's strayed from where he thought he would be, is earlier in the day he happened to stumble upon an actual murder scene, a crime scene with a gang killing. And rather than, you know, and he chose to record it, that was his job, when he realized that he possibly could have intervened, saved the man's life, helped him, realized that he didn't do that. He chose to film it instead. And so this is, you know, him lying in bed afterwards. And this is taken almost, like I say, almost verbatim from a conversation that I had with my wife. And it was such a turning point for me personally in my own personal life that I included it in the film.
Here's a scene from Falling.
Is it me?
Of course it isn't you. I'm just... Davey, I'm so far off. I'm failing.
You made $20,000 for one day's work.
Nah, I'm not talking about that. I don't care about that. Davey, I used to be such a different person. I used to pray, you know? I don't even pray anymore. I used to be a missionary. I haven't done anything really good in 12 years. Wasted 12 years. 12 years.
So the turning point for Richard Dutcher was to kind of go back to church for that one, right?
Yeah, it was.
So how do you think about that moment now as a person who's not an Orthodox Mormon, a believer in that way anymore? Do you know what I mean? Does it change the way you see that? Does it change the way you want people to reflect on this, on where he ends up, this idea of, I won't give anything away in the film, but this idea of redemption and, do you know what
right.
I mean?
Right. No. Well, first of all, one thing, as I was listening to that, I'm seeing it visually where we're only hearing it, but one thing I loved about the film was, I chose the house that they lived in very so that you would see the city of Los Angeles behind them in the windows as they're having this conversation.
Yeah.
Nighttime lights of Los Angeles, the cityscape. No, I've been asked that before. I think, you know, the film itself is not about, you know, a particular, you know, religion. One of the major themes is about, you know, that being – having the integrity or truth to yourself, you know, to who you are.
Yeah.
You know?
So whatever that might be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
I've been asked that – interestingly, you know, I'm asked sometimes by people, former Mormons and ex-Mormons, if I'm kind of embarrassed by my earlier films, you know, by God's Army or Brigham City. And I'm just like, no, absolutely not. Hmm. You know, they were very sincere – expressions of myself at the time. I'm in no way embarrassed. I'm very proud of them. In fact, I feel, as I said before, you know, I began to maybe this was the beginning, as far as the Mormons are concerned, the beginning of the end was using the artistic process of filmmaking to inform my spirituality. You know, I was actually, you know, these questions that usually you might think about, write down in your journal or whatever, I was, you know, I was exploring them in a very, very intense, long-term, major, deep way through my films. And that's, you know, that's what asking these questions in my work led me to certain answers that, you know, like I say, it's still the same process. The filmmaking is still influencing my spirituality and vice versa. It's just gone in a in an unexpected direction.
So it's not then about, of course, that the moral of the story is he should come back to church. It's that he should be true to himself. And whatever your ethical dilemma that you're working on that you may relate to in that scene and in the film more broadly, because it is about empathy, right? And
right.
compassion and being true to yourself. So it does, the Mormon component isn't really as crucial.
Oh, no. In fact, you know, it's there. It's certainly not a predominant – I mean, you'd watch the film for a while before you'd realize that they're Latter-day Saints, and they could have been anything. They could
sure.
have been Jewish. They could have been Catholic or Hindu or whatever. Actually, and I don't want to imbalance the film, the themes of the film, because the predominant theme about – I mean, what the film is just soaked in, and what I didn't really realize until that last part of editing, which is what I was talking about when I was trying to figure out why I had to make this film, you know, why – I was compelled and willing to just sacrifice everything to get this film made. And I didn't realize it until I was in editing. And when I realized that – and it came to me because I was looking at a shot that I had done in the film and realizing that it was a near duplicate of a shot that I had done in Brigham City where a little child is at a crime scene right behind the tape, the crime scene, watching this awful thing that has just happened, you know, in the real world. And you can see in that child's eyes, you know, that life – that life's changed. Their innocence has just been, you know, damaged.
Yeah.
And I realized that that's what not only this film but a lot of my films were about. It was this film that helped kind of illuminate to me what all these films had been about, which was about this devastating loss of innocence that most of us, almost everybody, experiences. You know, when that just tender, good, childlike innocence is just crushed by the world that we have been created in. So so that, I think, I would say, you know, that is the predominant theme of the film. It has nothing to do with any particular religion or what somebody should do or what they shouldn't do. It's pretty much just an expression, almost a mourning or a wailing, a death wail for that beautiful innocence that we all lose.
What are the issues you're thinking about? Will you talk to me about Triptych? This is another film that you're working on now, and it has lots of big questions.
Yeah, Triptych is one of the ways I'm balancing my work now is you know I'm doing more mainstream fun things, which are also you know delightful and wonderful to do. But in order to continue this journey that I feel is so important artistically, I'm doing these very you know they're very low budget, very anti-commercial, I would say, because I – just as in Falling where I actually approached it in a way, if there was a commercial way of – a commercial decision to make or the artistic decision to make, I would always make the artistic decision, whether that was casting or whatever. And it's the same thing with Triptych, which is a very personal – again, an exploration where I'm not – I'm just asking questions and this is a film that I'm delving into, you know, several things. And in the same way, not exactly sure what the nugget of perception that I'm trying to reach. But
you figure you'll find that in the editing room again?
Yeah, and this one actually, the whole artistic process with Triptych is different because I didn't even approach it with a script like I did with Falling. I just approached it with concepts, ideas, things that fascinated me. And I started the entire film with just a scene where I thought I just had a scene of a little boy finding a dead bird, again, probably back to the loss of innocence thing. And so I just grabbed my son and our dog and I drove out into the country, got a dead bird and shot a scene. I didn't have anything more than just that in mind and then went into the editing room. And while I was cutting that, the story began to evolve into something, you know, into something quite different. And so not only is it an experiment thematically that I'm doing, but it's also quite a technological experiment. I'm experimenting with all kinds of digital formats, but it's also a process experiment where, you know, approaching. There's three different segments of the film that are not intertwined, but they all relate, you know, thematically in some way. And again, it's a long process. I shot a lot of it last year. I've shot about half the film now. And the main thing that's holding me up now is I've got – of the three stories, I've got one story that just isn't resolving. I just don't know where it's going. And so
wow.
I keep taking the camera, going in and shooting a few more hours and trying to figure out – I'm trying to dig and figure out what the hell this movie's all about, or at least this segment of the movie is all about. So it's wonderful. It's a wonderful mix. You know, I got to make Evil Angel, which was a $7 million big budget horror movie with effects and all kinds of craziness with a, you know, a crew of 150. And then I've got Triptych, which is sometimes just me and a couple crew members and a couple cast members just, you know, off in a field somewhere shooting something. And I love both both kinds of filmmaking.
Let me ask you this finally. Are you tired of bearing your soul? Are you tired of the question? Do you figure at some point we'll stop asking you about your relationship to Mormonism and this will be over and done with?
In some ways, I'm tired of I'm tired of talking about it. Not because I think it's just because it's a conversation that to me, you know, I've been having for the past 7 years, and so you know, I'm naturally is a conversation people have because they haven't seen some of the work that I'm doing now and some of the work that I will be doing in the next couple of years, which I hope will create, you know, new conversations. And because it's certainly my hope that my work will continue to help me evolve and grow into some more fascinating, you know, subjects.
Richard Dutcher, independent filmmaker based here in Utah. His film Falling is currently showing at the Broadway Center Cinemas in Salt Lake City. Go to our website. There's a trailer there, and you can find out the times of the screenings at the Broadway Cinema. Richard Dutcher, good luck to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. We have technical direction from Mike Anderson, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.